Hi, yes, and welcome
Love
to this
Talk
K-Fashion Live Show. It is Wednesday, January 20th, 2016, and once again, here we are on the blogtalkradionetwork.com, blogtalkradio.com/K Thompson Live. I am the son, Eric Payne, and you are?
I'm the mother of the son, K Thompson. Welcome, everybody. It's been quite a week and a lot of busy news. A lot of interesting news. I'm laughing because of the story of Sarah Palin coming into town. And on the Daily News, by the way, what we expect to hear from, of course, Wayne Gilman. He's going to be joining us and joining us in this conversation. Are you there, Wayne Gilman, former director, news director of LIB BLS in New York? Hello? Are you there? Well, Wayne's going to be joining us very, very, very soon. But anyway, I was talking about, you know, the major news stories on the cover of the Daily on the cover of the Daily News is really something quite funny. There it is, a picture of Donald Trump and and Sarah Palin. They're both pointing at each other, and the title, the main story is "I'm with Stupid," and Palin is pointing to Trump, and Trump is pointing to Pitched Palin. Now, I'll tell you one thing, that really starts the whole movement of what's in the news, you know, today. And a lot of things are going off. By the way, there's also a back, you know, story about Governor Chris Christie. Come back to that in a minute. Yes, Eric.
We could have Wayne call back in because we're having a little technical difficulty here.
You want to have Wayne Gilman call back in? That's because
correct.
We have a little technical difficulty. So, Wayne, if you can do that, I'm quite sure everything will be okay because I know that you want to get involved with the conversation. But in the meantime, I just want to, look at the polls, you know, that has that in the Daily News here that tops in the polls. Mayor de Blasio is beating all comers. He has proved his job approval. He has improved his job approval. And
so that's the New York City poll.
That's the New York City, right. Yeah. And de Blasio, congratulations. Glad to hear that. Another thing is a story in the Daily News, another New York story, although about our New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, that he was, well, like we all know that he was embroiled in a Bridgegate scandal. In other words, the New Jersey governor, during a 2013 phone call, asked Governor Cuomo to tell his top appointee to report authority to F off, okay, because people have been still... They haven't forgotten about the closing of the George Washington Bridge and all that happened, and it was an awful situation. And Christie, as a political retribution, he did this as a political retribution toward the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey. This is what's said in the Daily News, and that's another story that's not going to go away. Okay.
The big story, though, that I probably want to discuss right off the bat will be probably maybe the debates. We had the Republican debates. We had also Sarah Palin come out in support of Donald Trump. So we'll focus on the big stories, and we can get into the local stuff in a minute. I want to introduce our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you loud and clear. Hello. That's good.
Oh, great. I thought... I was there before, but I guess there might have been something wrong with my connection, you know. How's everyone?
Yeah. Fine. How are you, Wayne? Yeah. We're talking about the top
okay.
And say it again?
No, I said I guess I'm okay. I mean, it's been quite a week. And, I mean, between Sarah Palin and this boycott of the Oscars, it's just amazing what's going on in our world.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just have been talking about, Governor Christie's F-bomb, you know, and then we've also been talking about how de Blasio is coming off, you know, as, you know, go to the top of the poll. And we're also, of course, a leading story in a lot of newspapers on, you know, in the print press and also the radio and news is about Governor Sarah Palin. My goodness. So what do you think, Wayne?
Well, it's funny. I was in a conversation with a former colleague of mine yesterday who is doing talk for Sirius Radio, Carl Nelson, And, you know, there's a perception that at some time, hopefully before the summer is over, Trump and Palin and that whole front-running crew will be dissolved, and the Republican contest is going to be tighter. His speculation is that out of nowhere, Jeb Bush is suddenly going to resonate with the American electorate, or at least the Republicans out there who are seeking the White House. And,
really?
It was an interesting perspective. And, I mean, we've known for months now that Trump has basically been grandstanding, playing on the emotions of people who want to hear that kind of rhetoric and fed up with what has happened in the last 8 years here. Whether they like Obama or not, there's a constituency out there now that feels they feel threatened because the country is the color scheme of the country is changing. You have the terrorist threats, and there are some people who feel that a lot of what has gone on during the previous administration will be a lot for Hillary Clinton to explain away. I mean, she's very gifted. I'm not counting her out, and my allegiance is with my party. But, you know, it's frightening to think what could possibly happen. And money talks, you know. And I think that's the only thing that basically I see with Trump that's going to be an issue, because you can't buy him. You know, everything has been about his money. And Sarah Palin, I don't know. I mean,
gifted in what? Were you thinking about Sarah Palin being gifted?
Oh, no, I don't find her gifted at all. I think she's an opportunist. I think Sarah Palin is no different than Donald Trump when it comes to seeking some popularity and notoriety, and all that stuff is going to fade away. You know, the fact that she was there basically was to make Trump stand out even more. It wasn't so much that Sarah Palin supported Trump, but it just made Trump look like as if he was the man of the hour, which is basically his MO, you know? If the emphasis isn't on him, he can't share the spotlight with anyone else. I don't know why up to 2 months ago or 3 months ago, Palin was in Ted Cruz's corner, and now all of a sudden she's... you know, poning her stakes on Trump. And I don't see her as the vice presidential candidate. I think this is just about trying to stir up the emotions of a certain part of the electorate, and they feel that they can continue this dog and pony show into the summer. But I think
it's a dog and pony show. And you know what I think?
Yeah.
It's the best comedy show on television. It is hilarious.
It really is.
Donald Trump, with his way of delivering things, never gets to spelling out any plan. And he's also very funny and very entertaining. And then you have this nutcase, Sarah Palin, with that squeaky voice trying to be serious. I mean, you know, really, this is good comedy.
You're absolutely right, Kate. You have two people who are intellectually and politically limited. I mean, you still don't know what Trump's foreign policy is. And
exactly.
I did refresh your memory about the Katie Couric interview with Sarah Palin 4 or 5 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is, it speaks volumes. She acknowledged that she's grown since then. But, I mean, to throw her support behind him, you know, it's meaningless. And the two Latino Republican candidates that are like second and third, they're trying so hard to outwhite themselves that they're going to cancel themselves out. So therefore, I mean, there may be something to what Carl was saying about Jeb Bush, but I would hate to see a Bush back in office there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Bush will get back in office anytime soon. You never know, but I still think Hillary is a favorite. You know, it always surprises me just how serious, or just that there is a segment of the population, of this backwards, ignorant population, that really thinks Sarah Palin is some sort of leader. And anyway, if you listen to this woman speak after a while, it's really bizarre. The way she speaks, first off, kind of does a crazy thing with the language. And just that she just does not know a lot. And here they're appealing, you know, the Trump candidacy and these people. These people are appealing to, the people that they appeal to are, you know, people who watch TV, reality show. They listen to Fox, so they only get one source of information that agrees with them. And there's no real hard critical thinking there, from my perspective. And there's no real deep insight. You know, the problems that plague our country are pretty complex. And a lot of these people think that you can just go over there and carpet bomb them and do all that stuff. And it's all that simple, you know. Like Ted Cruz or Sarah Palin said, you know, that President Obama needs to let the military do what they do and go over there and kick ISIS's ass. Like Barack has been the one holding them back. Like,
yeah, right.
It wasn't the 16 words that were lies about going to war with Iraq that originally got us over there. But let's not look at that. So when you're dealing with people who really are basically stupid, you know, this woman quit her job as governor of Alaska after she got back from the presidential campaign when they lost. Now, if that doesn't tell the average person something about someone who, you know, serving in public life and serving in a public office is something that's not to be taken lightly. But some people use it as a stepping stone to increase their star as a personality. Obviously, that's what Sarah Palin did. And to see people that take this person seriously, there was one person at least I saw being interviewed that said he didn't like her, and had a whole bunch of other people that didn't like her. It's just ironic that these people take it seriously. Well, you wanted to say, Ma?
I find the humor, you know, in a lot of, you know, news anyway, especially political news, and also especially this time that people are running for the presidency. And Sarah Palin to me is a joke. She is really a joke with that high squeaky voice, and she's trying to make points. I don't know who she's talking to at times. I don't know if she's talking to the American public or females or men or who, because she is really a natural comedian. So maybe she has been chosen by Trump to play that part as a natural comedian. He's running for the presidency. The presidency of the United States of America, the strongest country in the entire globe. You know, we have jokesters. You know, really. So what do you think, Wayne?
No, I happen to agree with you, and I think Eric hit the nail on the head a moment ago when he mentioned how she resigned from being the governor of the state of Alaska, because I think she realized after that came back in 2008 that, you know, she didn't have the skill set to even run the state that she was elected governor to, you know? I mean, she was very focused on what was going on in her state, and that's it. She became an author. She wrote a book sort of to explain herself as to why she believes the way she, the way she thinks. But, I mean, the bottom line is when you juxtapose or compare a Sarah Palin to a Hillary Clinton or a Michelle Obama, you know, you see how limited this person is. And her projection is to try to reach the average person out there, and she feeds into a particular demographic. It's the same demographic that I was saddened every time I see this beautiful young black woman on Fox TV this morning. I wanted to throw up, Stacey Dash, you know, and talking about. I mean, there's so much similarities there in terms of the attractiveness, but what's between their ears? You know, is there any substance? And I know I sound very, politically incorrect by saying this, but I mean, it's not even a gender issue. You know, I mean, I know men who are just as limited, black and white. You know, you may have a great package in terms of how you carry yourself, but I mean, what are you doing? I mean, do you have any concept of how this United States was formed? Do you have any understanding of the civil rights struggles that Americans have gone through? You know, and people, so leaders like Donald Trump, you know, he has his money. He doesn't identify with, he wants to, because he thinks that's going to be his base, but he doesn't really identify with anybody out there, the millions of people that he feels that he can play to because he's an entertainer, not a politician.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you. I think it's really a joke. I think that Trump is enjoying the comedy, and he's a large part of the comedy. He is the comedy. And then he brings in Sarah Palin, who is even above him in a comic sense. And she is, with that squeaky voice. She says nothing. She is absolutely silly. And you wonder what in the world is the world coming to with, you know, people who are talking like that about the most important position in the world, the presidency of the United States. They cannot compare, and not even in the same class, with President Barack Obama. That is impossible. And the First Lady, Michelle Obama, I don't even want them to mention her name. So really, you know, we've got to get on the straight and narrow and try to find people who are really qualified, because this is a joke. And people are making a joke, you know, this is a comedy act. You're making that of the United States presidency, and I think that is absolutely dangerous, really.
Well, the whole world is watching. That's the danger, you know. It just goes to show what goes on in this country. And I'm not saying that the world isn't changing, but, I mean, the deal is that just the Republican platform alone, to me, is going to turn the clock back. I mean, the things that this presidency was able to achieve. I'm not saying that Barack Obama was squeaky clean, but anybody who is going to inherit what he has left this nation and the legacy that he's left behind, you know, speaks volumes. I mean, it's certainly going to be an easier transition, with him leaving office than it was for him to take over from Bush. We were in the middle of what I thought might have been, at least I missed the first depression, but I mean, as far as 2007, 2008, that was the closest thing that I'd ever witnessed in my lifetime as a depression in this country. And the programs that this man was able to put together, the fact that he went out and he got everyone that George W. Bush had planned on getting and couldn't in the 8 years that he was in the office, you know, it speaks volumes. And the only thing that I still think that there may be some correction to take place with the healthcare issue, but there's so many different things that we can point to show where America is getting better. The economy is getting better. There are more and more people working. Maybe not everyone is getting the kind of pay that they should get, but we're going from an area in which there was no employment. And, right. and we're almost, I think, at 5%, if I'm not mistaken, nationally, and I think 8% in terms of the black community is concerned.
Yeah.
You know? But well,
it's not ironic, it's just what the other side does. It's interesting, you know, they don't mention in any of these debates, the Republican debates at least, they're not mentioning the economy anymore. That's not an issue. Which was an issue, which was the issue when Barack Obama took office, and it's just you know, you see where they want to attack him. Like I watched a little bit of Sarah Palin trying to talk today, and wondering when she says, you know, her son and these other vets or armed people or service people in the army wonder if the president knows what they go through day to day, and this is the guy that you know made sure that they got Osama bin Laden. Obama's the one that's made sure to try to bring him home from the war. And George Bush and Dick Cheney are the ones that sent us to war. They're the ones that sent our troops over without the proper things that they needed. They're the ones that allowed the no-bid contract to be bought out by Cheney's friends and give insufficient services. Where some example where they're building showers and didn't install the showers correctly, and service people were getting electrocuted, and all kind of things that were going on. And this woman stands up and wants to talk about how bad of a president Barack Obama is. Just, you know, that's what they do. They act like you know, they're taking the very same points and the very issues that the Democrats, Barack Obama, the Democrats were making, and now they've adopted them as their points, you know, like they're for the average person, minimum wage and things like that. So it's really ironic. There is a point in the Republican debate where Neil Cavuto asks a question of either Chris Christie or Ted Cruz. And the way that he asked the question, he really went to great lengths to make sure that he gave the president no credit for, I think it was the economy or the situation. But he asked it in such a way that it was clear that this particular issue was a problem beforehand. But the way he asked it was that he didn't give credit to the president for addressing the problem, just if the problem existed, what would the candidate do? And it was really, I'm trying to find it, because it was really, really interesting how he worded this question, not to give the president any credit for the problem, but ask the problem. Oh, it was something like about the budget. And it said, if the budget, Barack Obama claims that he dropped the unemployment down and the jobs numbers has gone up. And he said, if the economy still continues as it is now, what will you do if you're handed off something like this, and I'm paraphrasing, handing off an economy which is going in the same direction as it was when Barack Obama took office. And basically what it was saying is, like, if you got the economy handed off to you from George Bush, what would you do? It was a ridiculous question. They were trying to say, you know, they negated the work that Barack Obama did to bring the economy into ring, and say now that it's having a little bit of rockiness, it looks like it's going down again. So once it goes down again to the point that it was when Barack Obama took office, what would you do as a candidate to just shape it? Uh-huh. And it's like, you mean it would be, I mean, the whole thing is that you mean it would be the same way as if they won after George Bush. Uh-huh. That's basically what you want to say, Neil. But just the way that he went about it, it went all around it, not to give Barack any of the credit for fixing the economy. Now that it's on the way down, they want to say, well, it's on the way down, it's going to end up being just as bad as when he got it. So what would you do?
Well,
I don't know.
Again, these guys need to be fact-checked, because when I hear crap like that, you know, a red flag appears as far as I'm concerned. You know, and Fox should not be the venue to promote, because their history alone says a lot about what kind of fair and balanced debate that's going to take place. Have Americans now who are leaving jobs. Beg your pardon?
I said there's no facts. Just you say they should be fact checked. They don't have anything to do with the facts. You know, we know that Fox lies about the news, but those people
make stuff up.
What I'm saying. So the facts, the hell with the facts. They're making up the facts.
Exactly, and this is what Caputo did the other day. I mean, based on what you're describing. You know, Americans now, in the first time in about 10 years, are now leaving jobs that they had to hold on to, and that they're experimenting with the job market to get. In other words, if things weren't getting better, employers wouldn't even think to turn around and hire people and snatch people, talented people away from jobs that they had. And the deal is that, you know, you wouldn't want to even risk that if you felt the economy was about to go south. You know,
yeah.
I mean, if a Republican gets in office, I don't know what could happen, because, I mean, basically the banks prove that they're large and in charge. But, I mean, even when you look at what Obama did for them, you know, some of these characters would have rather seen the place collapse. AIG, all these institutions, Chase, Citibank, I mean, he bailed them out. And you know, the Republicans would not even think about. And I think there was only one candidate who I happened to like on that side if I were to vote Republican, and that was the governor Kasich.
He's from
the Midwest, you know. Mm-hmm. And they always give him short shrift. But I think of all the Republican players, you know, he's the one person who I think makes a lot of sense. And that's it. But, I mean, the sad part is that you're absolutely right. They will do things to undermine what has been constructed in the last 8 years. And I just think that, you know, the Democrats will have a hard way to go if they go back and they're already, you know, creating the spin. You know, they're making the Hillary Clinton candidacy a Bill Clinton reelection. You know, like all of a sudden his history, which he's apologized for time and again. I mean, should we bring this up again? I mean, aren't we adult now? I mean, hasn't society matured to the point? This is 15, 20 years ago. She's running. He's not running. He benefits from her running.
Know.
I admit that, you know. But, I mean, it's just,
you know, the answer to
that
question, Wayne, is no. No, we haven't. I mean,
yes.
At least that side, there's a segment of society that hasn't matured. There's a segment of society that still wants to keep it where black people get back and white people get forward. I mean, clearly not. I mean, we're looking at a segment of society that sees a society where they want to be supreme. I mean, some of them said it, that they don't have the same advantages and opportunities they've had as white people. I mean, some of them have come out and said it. So, you know, and you hear them saying so many words, and Sarah Palin, who, you know, is just when you listen to her talk, you really wonder, it's like, wow, these people are really standing here listening to this lady, this character, talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unbelievable. I mean, trying to make up a language, the way you talk, and we who are of the other way, where we think that, oh, but yes, we hold on. It's like a kind of like a some old protest poetry from bad protest poetry combined with the rap, with spoken word, just continue talking. Because you think that's what it is. It's unbelievable, this woman. I mean,
well, you know, the fact of the matter, you know, they have raced for the White House. Brain freeze. Alaska Yakker Palin hops on Trump crazy train. Brain freeze. Oh, my God. That's so true.
Well, that's hitting the nail on the head. I didn't get the chance to see that one, but, you know,
freeze.
You're absolutely right. You know,
something
about Sarah Palin reminds me of one of my teachers. And when I see her, I just turn the sound down and just look at her face. Because I used to have a crush on somebody who looked like her 30 years ago. I mean, I was a child. So, I mean, the deal is, it's just that I just turn the sound down. I just look. And once she's off the stage, then I, you know, go back to normal, but she's a waste of time. And, you know, what can I tell you?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. This is what, can you turn that back to the page with Trump? And here's one of her lines. She said, "They stomp on our necks and tell us to chill. No, we're not going to chill. It's time to drill, baby, drill." So, I was watching her say that. I was like, wow, she just kind of made that kind of a limerick rhyme kind of thing and twist, turned it around and going to the next thought. It's just, wow, I wonder, English teachers must, grammatical professors must really
That's why we laugh.
Get a brain freeze when they listen to talk to this woman talk.
Well,
it's very difficult to hear her, really, really.
Unbelievable.
You know, because I don't think she's putting two and two together, really. But she's musing. And I think this is the biggest comedy show, you know, on the air right now. And when she comes in with that voice, I mean, come on, who's going to take her seriously? You know, I figure some probably got, one of her sons, I guess, sick of the whole thing. He's 26 years old, and he was arrested in Alaska on charges that he hit his girlfriend, and he was also armed with a rifle, threatening to shoot himself, according to records. And Palin was busted. What's his name? Trek. Palin, was busted Monday night and was still on charges of fourth-degree assault, interfering with the report of a domestic violence crime, and possession of a firearm, in other words, a gun while intoxicated. So, you know, he's got problems. But then again, you know, when you see it, you know, the family that he came out with, you know, you say, hey, excuse me.
Well, before you continue, the fact is that he came back from
the service.
So it might be post-traumatic stress. This is him. So let's be clear that we don't blame the family structures. That she was allude to the fact that he might be suffering from a post-traumatic stress disorder, which is probably what they all are suffering from when they get back. The fact that she tried to tie it to Obama, President Obama, or try to somehow make a veiled line that it might have been the president's fault because he's a bad commander-in-chief is really idiotic from an idiotic person. But I want to talk a little bit, first move to the Republican debate, which also took place this week.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz went at each other, and that was interesting. What do you think there?
You know, and then when they start talking, and when Trump starts talking, you know, it's very difficult for him to, you know, make sense, because he'll start something, and then he stops, and he'll call somebody a name, he'll go over it, but he never finishes anything.
That's how he's getting old.
You know, he never finishes anything. So what is he talking about? And yet he's running for the presidency of the entire country, the most powerful country in the entire world. I mean, this is not laughable. It's sad. But I'll tell you another thing. It's also dangerous. Okay? It's amazing. I can't, you know, it's very difficult to deal with and to take anything coming out of, you know, the Republicans. Seriously, you got Cruz. Cruz, I don't know, he always looks like he's smirking. And he always has this expression on his face that is sneaky, you know, and, you know, he just looks like he is not to be trusted. Well, if that's his, you know, way of dealing with the people who are watching him when he speaks, he's been very successful, because I don't believe a word that man says.
Talking about Donald Trump now, right?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about Ted Cruz. They both, I think they both are of the same ilk, if you will. They both have a tendency to tell lies. They both have a tendency to expand on things that mean absolutely nothing. And then there's a smirk behind it.
Ted Cruz
and Trump. And Trump. He gives no plan, nothing. So, I mean, you know, I'm amused, but I don't think this is a very... It's about a time to be amused, you know, when they're talking about being, you know, the most important person in the entire world to govern everyone. I just don't.
Did you get a chance to see the Republican debate and Trump and
had a way? Yeah, I saw some of it. I didn't see all, but I mean, the thing that really got to me with Cruz was the issue with when he spoke about New York and the way he criticized people who come. To me, that was political suicide right there. I don't care how many times he came back to apologize. And even there's an arrogance about him. Before I even go any further, I think the very thing that Jamon was just talking about with Donald Trump, they're both very arrogant, but from a completely different perspective. You know, Donald Trump is someone who would strike me as somebody who only has a GED, whereas Ted Cruz, you know, he's like the educator and the pundit, and he's always talking down to people, and he's got these theories, and the fact that he would come out and say such, you know, unfavorable things about a place where he's getting, he's been one of his watering holes in order to get money from. I mean, there are a lot of conservatives that live in this area, you know, quiet as it's kept. Not everybody is liberal as he would have you think. And the bottom line is that he would risk saying things like that just to put Trump down. It just goes to show that Trump got under his skin for no reason at all, and he wasn't thinking about what he was saying when he came out with that crack. So as far as I'm concerned, it's nonsense. It is comical. I mean, I get nothing out of it. And to me, the other contenders there who don't get as much airtime, like even Chris Christie, I mean, I think he's about to self-destruct, although they say his numbers are improving. But it's Kasich.
Wait a minute,
and,
you said what? You said what?
I heard Christie's numbers in New Hampshire have improved, but I don't think he's going to wind up being the standard bearer for the party.
I hope not. You know, he goes off like a bomb. You know, he really does.
He
says crazy things of the world. And he has, for instance, he said something the other day that I forget what it is. I'll find it in a minute. But, you know, he's dangerous. He really is. You know, when you tell somebody to sit down and shut up, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh,
and
please.
Then also the George Washington Bridge scandal is still hanging there. Of course, he doesn't want anybody to mention that. But listen, I remember when he was arresting Charles James, he wanted to give Charles James 20 years, you know, for what he did.
Yeah.
It wasn't worth 20 years. And neither was Sharp, by the way. But, you know, he's a wise guy. He reminds me of a little kid, little fat kid who was picked on when he was young. And now he's going to get back at everybody, you know?
I mean, to me, Chris Christie is probably not going to be a factor as time goes. I might try to move to a vice presidential slot. I don't think his...
I would hate for that to happen.
his run for president is going to work out. But getting back to Ted Cruz and the choice that he made to really basically diss New York, yeah, that's an interesting thing. You never heard somebody willing to disrespect the whole region. Certainly not an area that's got about 10, 12 million people or whatever. And the interesting thing is that, to me, you know, a lot of people like that Ted Cruz is trying to appeal to, they like someone, you know, the fact that, I think the fact that he dissed New York like that, you know, New Yorkers have that New York way, you know, with those New York values, that appeals to a lot of those kind of people from Texas, some people from Texas,
exactly.
From down south, that have this disdain for New York City and everything that statement encompasses. It's diversity, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, the social, liberally social, social values that people have, basically, when I don't know how you call it, just being accepting of all people, liberal, but and a lot of people like Ted Cruz are willing to diss New York and that type of vibe in order to gain the votes in other parts of the country, and they really pit, you know, the rural area against the urban area, and it's an old trick where you have a elected officials from those parts of the country throwing out that image and that vibe about New Yorkers having that those New York values. You wanted to say about?
Yeah, I want to. Well, you know, I think we're just about finished with, you know, this topic. I want to go to another topic, and I think we can shift about Reverend Al. Reverend Al has come a long, long way, right, Wayne? We were all together at one time when, you know, during that famous case, I won't even say the name again because it's over. And now Al has become a statesman. He's speaking out, and I like what he says, and I like the, he even draws pictures, and he doesn't mince words. As a matter of fact, in the, the Daily News that I'm looking at here, anyway, he says they have him listed as, you know, in the title, Reverend Al, Let's All Yell Cut. Well, you know, he pushed Tuesday for a boycott of the Oscars broadcast and slamming the difference. Why? Because he was slamming the lack of diversity among nominees. And I was wondering, too, when I saw the list of people there, and I said, I didn't see any, you know, black people, maybe three or four. And those blacks who were, you know, I think they were snubbed. That's Sam Jackson, Jason Mitchell, Will Smith, Idris Elba, and Michael Jordan, B. Jordan, rather. So, you know, and Jada, a female, Dynamite, you know, who you know, it's powerful. They are, you know, against the whole Oscars presentation, that event, because the fact that they haven't had any recognition. They're not even recognizing a lot of the people who have really been making their marks in the movies and the movies themselves. And among those people that snubbed, I just read those names before, Sam Jackson, Jason Mitchell, Will Smith, Idris Elba, and Michael Jordan. So I don't even know what to understand that. But who makes these choices? Can you help us out here, Eric?
Yeah, they've been saying on the news for the last couple of days who the Academy members were.
Mm.
And I think the majority of them are around a medium age of 62 years old, white and male. So you have that thing. And I think the way it works, it maybe the actors vote for the actors and stuff like that. You know, as far as boycotting the Oscars, you know, it's somebody said they have the lady who played the Fresh Prince's first aunt on the Fresh Prince. She did a video response to Jada's response saying that, you know, she's just implying that the only reason that she's boycotting is because her husband didn't get nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? And who, there might be a little bit of truth to that.
Sure, it's truth to it.
However,
yeah, but
I think, you know, maybe Will should have gotten nominated. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. I was curious that Sam didn't get any Golden Globe nominations for that movie that he did, The Hateful Out. People talk about Idris Elba, but I was telling somebody the other night, I don't know if that film is eligible to be nominated for an Oscar. Because it might have been, I was under the impression that was being released as a mini series. Maybe I'm mistaken, and it came out on Netflix. So I don't know what that meets the requirements. But the other actors, I don't know why they didn't get nominated and stuff like that. Normally, it seems like people have had to really make enough noise, so to speak, do enough work that they start gaining the attention of the Oscar voters. But, you know, it is what it is. It's not the same. It's always been the same. So, you know, it's the Oscars, and they're going to give it to whoever they want to give it to. I just say, you know, if they're mad at what they're doing at the Oscars, they should really be pissed off at what they're doing in the Congress. Because the Oscars, just, you know, it's just that. So it is what it is. I mean, there's certainly a lot of validity in what Jada was saying. But, you know,
yeah,
that won't change until you got a more diverse population voting for things.
Well, I think maybe there should be. Look, Selma wasn't even listed, right? Also, what was it? It was Kevin Hart and Steve McQueen, the black director. Let me see, the black British director of the 2015 Best Picture winner, 12 Years a Slave. And what about Lupita? What's her name? Shrunko? I forget her name. Lupita Nyong'o. I know I'm probably mispronouncing that, and I apologize for that.
Yeah, but
well,
she won last year. Yeah,
yeah,
she was really,
well,
there was nothing that came out, so that's what I'm saying.
Right. But
you
know, the thing is,
deserves mention, especially in 12 Years a Slave.
Right.
Okay.
But
the thing that I find so disconcerting is that there are even films that largely were carried by black actors and actresses that, you know, their roles were insignificant compared to what's his name, played in Rocky. Can't think of the Italian actor's name. You know what I'm talking about. He was Rocky.
Yes, Stallone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, he's getting an award for his role, which was almost minuscule compared
to the how it works. I mean, that's Sylvester Stallone. He's been around for a long time. It's like anything else, you know, body of work. You've been at the job 20, 30 years. Obviously, people are going to recognize that. As I said, the Academy seems to have, from what I've been noticing since I've been watching it for a number of years, the actors seem to never get in on the first. There are actors who get in on the first try. Obviously, those are usually the white ones, but I've noticed far more. Some actors seem to get awards after being nominated for a time or two, several times. And it almost seems like they have to get on the Academy's radar list and then get nominated again for consistency and then another time, see if they win it. So that's what it seems like to me. Also, it seems as though, like I said, very rarely where people are first-time people come in. It does happen, obviously, but that usually doesn't happen for people of color. And this is the first time Stallone's been back there in four years. you got to realize there's a whole generation of people that are doing things in Hollywood now that grew up watching his movies and have a soft spot for someone like the Rocky character in their hearts if they've been growing up. So all of those things, I think, have a tendency to come into play when you're thinking about those. But certainly
the racism. I'm not saying that he's not worthy, but, I mean, the deal is it's just that when you look at the other characters who were part of making that film successful and they're not even being acknowledged, I think that speaks volumes. And I didn't get a chance to see Concussion either, but I had friends who saw it, and they said that Will Smith's performance comparable to what Jamie Foxx did with Ray Charles. And, I mean, right. Anybody who saw Ray Charles, you know, where he won that Oscar, I mean, Jamie Foxx came out of nowhere, but he can blow it. 5 minutes into watching Ray Charles, Jamie Foxx was Ray Charles. So, I mean, the deal is that I don't understand. We have so much talent out there, and we still don't get the credit. And I think it's just the system, and I think Clooney this morning had something to say about just the industry itself. You know, we are making advances, but there's still a lot of us who are not getting hired. You know, there's still a lot of us that just, you know, are given short shrift. I mean, Eric, that's your area. I mean, you've been successful in one life. When you see Spike Lee refusing to go, and I know Spike is your guy, what is your thinking about that?
I think why he refused to go last year and all the other years that black people were left out. I mean, you know, it's not the first year it's been happening. So, you know, all this kind of protest, I mean, the last couple of years I guess have been good. Yet, girl playing the slave and winning for that and stuff like that. But if you really want to talk about the issues, talk about why is it that she can only get nominated for playing a slave. Talk about why those movies are the movies. I mean those are real issues. And, you know, it's ironic this year Spike had a movie that I understand was some people didn't like. I haven't seen it, but I've spoken to people who have seen
Chirac.
It. Chirac didn't really care for it that much. But, you know, about the I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of six on one and a half dozen on the other. I mean, you know, Jada's stance is a little bit weakened by the fact that it's because your husband didn't get nominated for an Oscar. You're looking a little bit, you know, you're looking a little bit one side. You look like you're not really necessarily doing it because it's the injustice. Is that the injustice that it happened to come back and strike your husband? And, you know, Spike had a movie come out this year. So it's looking like a little bit sour grapes, you know? I mean, you know, I understand, and I certainly agree with them and know exactly what they're talking about, but also you got to, that's the system. That's the system, so.
You know, we dealt with this, you know, not too long ago, Brian Bernard Marsh, I'm sorry, and his second published book, his first book was The Great White Way, Great White Lies. And he published this in 2008.
Right.
And it was a documentation of other performance struggles and activism as people of color fighting to end the discriminatory hiring practice on Broadway.
Same issue.
Yeah, you had him on the air
for you. I mean, you know, we recognize it, and it's good that people are talking about it.
Yep.
Now, you know, not just black people are the ones that are noticing it, but people that are not black or non-ethnic are talking about it. And that's great. You know, it's the Oscars. It's about movies, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, those people are making millions of dollars, so it's an injustice, yes. But there's a great bigger injustices that are going on that people are facing in the world. So people kind of, they're sorry that the actors aren't getting nominated for their awards, but, hey, people are trying to pay their rent.
Ryan Marsh, he's been fighting this battle for a long time.
Right, and like I said, it's something that we've been, as long as we are black in this country and we face the issues that we face, just in society, period, everything else is going to be a reflection of that. I mean, let's look at Flint, Michigan, because I want to talk about that real quick. But this is another one.
Of course, yeah.
These people can't even drink the water. And there is devastating effects on an entire community for perhaps a generation. And I was just, before we went on the air here, was looking at the doctor who took it upon herself to do some tests about the water. She said, if you want to set a people back, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is that there's brain damage, there's behavioral problems that are associated with lead poisoning in water, all kinds of health issues and things like that, but that people can deal with for years and maybe generations. And it is ironic. I wonder if there's not more to it than them just being very cheap and not want, and disrespectful to this poor
community.
I'm quite sure it is.
Because I agree. I think this is a setup. I think Obama turned around when he said that this is his Katrina. I think reading between the lines, you know, this is not a natural disaster how, you know, the hurricane destroyed the South, you know, when Bush was president. But this is a setup. This problem, you brought it to the fore 3 weeks ago, Eric, because it was the first time I had heard about it. And but it had been festering for 2 years already, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the White House was, I mean, not the White House. I guess some members of government were aware of the problem. But this is a Republican administration. And the guy, when he got on TV today to apologize, you know, he made it sound like as if, you know, it was like some sort of childhood thing that, you know, it was his mistake and he intends to correct it now. But the damage is done. This man should be impeached, you know. They didn't they didn't waste time to get rid of that black mayor in New Orleans when Katrina hit, and that was a natural mm-hmm. disaster. You know, they're going to let this guy ride out his term? Please.
Yeah, he clearly, Rick Snyder, if we look back about a year or two ago when he was first starting to take over these towns and by appointing a city manager to these towns that were they were having budgetary problems. The towns were in the red. And it was first came in the news, Rachel Maddow pinpointed it. It was in the news about a year and a half
mm-hmm.
ago, how he was appointing city managers, and they were totally absurding the authority of the local government, the mayor, city council, people that were elected officials within those municipalities, those towns. Their authority was null and void. And they are absurded by these managers, city managers that he appointed. And he did this to a couple other towns, I believe Flint, Michigan was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the other towns he happened to do it to seemed like they were a majority African-American population. So I'm just wondering, is there an overall plan that this man has?
Sounds like
To
bring down or to do damage to people in those communities. Because as this doctor said, if you want to set people back, lead-based water, lead in the products is one way to do it because it has so many wide damaging effects health-wise and mental and cognitive functions like that. So I'm wondering if he was trying to, you know, set this land up, take over this land by these people, give them poison water. I don't know, but a lot of things kind of seem to be like ducks, like they're getting in a row a little bit. At least the fact that he clearly doesn't seem like he cares for the residents of the state that have to be African American.
That has gone on too long for it to be an accident. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it a plan? I think so. All right. So and this maybe this is starting in this one place. Well, it's working. Okay. But what has to happen is somebody has got to do something about it. We are bringing it to the news. We're joining a whole lot of other news people, and we're talking about it. And I'm so glad that somebody finally is getting on it. It's ridiculous. Also, I want to say, you know, congratulations to Will Smith and Jada because, you know, they are saying, you know, exactly what people have been thinking about, you know, the Oscars. People are, you know, all these different movies and whatnot, and we haven't mentioned them, so kudos goes to them also. So, but, you know, if you want to say more about the water, go ahead.
We're not really finished. Matt, interesting thing here. It says that Flint, Michigan lies about 70 miles from the shores of the largest group of freshwater bodies in the world, the Great Lakes. Yet its residents can't get clean water from their taps. That's remarkable because someone did say something about those bodies of water, fresh water, were some of the purest that people could get drinking water from. And this whole thing started nearly 2 years ago, but the state decided to switch their water supply from Lake Huron, where they're paying for the city of Detroit, to the Flint River. And that's a notorious tributary through towns known to locals for its filth. So it's not like it was something that they didn't know would be a bad thing. And for some residents say the water would come in brown, and people would say that, you know, there's sewage in the water, but it wasn't sewage. It was actually iron. It was 19 times more corrosive than the Lake Huron supply. So they knew about this 2 years previous
exactly.
to what was supposed to go on. And I think one of the governor's top aides told them that this is something that we need to get taken care of because people are going to think that it could become an issue. So it's really something remarkable. You want to say something?
Yeah, listen, this is it. This paper says toxic Katrina, an avalanche of pressure forced the governor of Michigan to apologize Tuesday as he pledged to fix the bumbling response to a catastrophic water crisis that is being compared to Hurricane Katrina, everyone.
Yeah.
Governor Rick Snyder offered sympathy during the State of the State address, and he's working on a solution of the debacle they're saying, but it's been going on entirely too long for you even to consider, you know, what he's working on.
Okay, we got to wire down.
I didn't think he was sincere in his apology at all, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we got off into that subject a little bit. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening into the Kay Thompson Live Show here on the blogtalkradio.com network. Every week you can hear us live 8 to 9 p.m. at blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive, or you can listen anytime for archived episodes, even older episodes of the show. I want to say thanks again for listening on this 20th day of January. Thank you to Wayne, our other co-host.
Thank you.
Say goodbye, Wayne. All right.
And I'm Kay Thompson. Join us again every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. That, what is it, backslash? Is it backslash, Aaron?
Yeah, / Kay Thompson Live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Eric Payne, the Sun. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.